Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome in. It's a Thursday edition of the Extravaganza here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. How's everybody doing on this fine, fine Thursday afternoon? Jim Kuslin in for Bob France. Got the day off. He'll be back in the big chair tomorrow. Lots of fun stuff we got for you here on the show today. I kind of divide it up in two ways, if you will. There's a lot of baseball talk I want to get into with the races and everything, not to mention the fact that both the Indians and Tigers are playing some afternoon baseball today that we're going to keep you updated on as the afternoon goes along. Your first update, the six complete in Comerica, Twins leading the Tigers 4-1. Indians now on top of the White Sox, 1-0, that game going in to the bottom of the third. So we're going to have some baseball talk on the races and some various side notes on all those. We'll have some open phones, of course, through the day today as well. And as is always the case with me, anything you want to talk about, fair game here on 106.5 The Ticket at 866-240-1065. There's also going to be some football talk going on as well. A lot of it related to college, though we might dabble into a few things in the NFL as well. But definitely going to talk some college football the weekend slowly but surely getting here. We got a couple of great guests for you. First at 4:05, his usual slot weekly to give you all the Buckeye news. That'll be Paul Keel's voice of the Buckeyes joining us at 4:05. Ohio State getting ready for that game against Oklahoma coming up here on Saturday night. By the way, a pregame time at about 6 o'clock right here on the Ticket Saturday night. 3:45. I sat down a little earlier with Jason Candle, the head man with the Toledo Rockets. They got Fresno State coming to the Glass Bowl on Saturday afternoon, so we're going to talk to him about that at about 3:45 today. Speaking of that game, keep your ears peeled, people. I got a whole bunch, three separate four packs I'm going to be giving away over the course of the show today to go see the Rockets at the Glass Bowl against Fresno State coming up on Saturday. There's also other interesting matchups out there and where we kind of shake out as this is for a lot of teams. This is the final week for this week or next week for the most part. Final week of out-of-conference play. Definitely the case for the Big Ten, as they'll be in 9 conference games, by the way, this season. So this is it for out-of-conference play for the Buckeyes, for Michigan, who takes on Colorado. And an interesting matchup we haven't touched on really all week. Notre Dame taking on Michigan State in a battle of ranked opponents coming up on Saturday. And, of course, DeShone Kizer, the Central Catholic one-time quarterback, he's the definite starter nowadays for Notre Dame, as despite the loss in overtime, did very, very well in Texas, was named the starter. Of course, Notre Dame ended up beating up on Nevada last Saturday in South Bend. Now they get Michigan State, so a whole different animal there. And that's kind of the most interesting matchup in terms of regionally, in terms of the teams. You got Bowling Green, they're going to be at home to Middle Tennessee. I mentioned the Rockets at home to Fresno State. So we're going to talk some football over the course of the day today, too. Again, Jason Candle, head coach of the Toledo Rockets, joining us about 3:45. Paul Keels, voice of the Buckeyes, his usual Thursday slot at 4:05. 866-240-1065. But we're starting with baseball, partially in honor of the fact that both Tigers and Indians are playing today. It's still 6 games right now in the division, as both won last night. And both kind of having interesting starters for today's game, because on the one hand, Tigers had to juggle a couple things, because originally they were going to have Jordan Zimmermann finally return from the disabled list and start today. Well, that didn't happen. They ended up putting him in a simulated game yesterday. That kind of went okay. Nick Castellanos tried, tried to take an at-bat. He did in that very same simulated game, but apparently that wasn't working. Manager Brad Ausmus not wanting to call it a setback, but It means the odds of Nick Castellanos retaking his third base spot in the near future, i.e. the next couple of days of the weekend, that's pretty much out the door. And technically now, question mark, if he's going to be able to return in time before the end of the regular season. And that question is now being thrown out there about Jordan Zimmermann. Is he going to be able to finish the regular season as a part of this rotation for the Detroit Tigers? Don't know. And the Tigers are kind of not wanting to get into full details about that, leaving us to speculate if that's the case or not. But it's led to some interesting pitching matchups because it forced the Tigers to put Mike Pelfrey back in the rotation for this one today. Because he'd been out of the bullpen, he was going to be on one of those pitch count sort of bullpen games. The Indians have done a couple of those recently due to the struggles of Josh Tomlin, who, by the way, had his first good start in seemingly 2 months yesterday. They kind of were going for a bullpen day today, but Mike Pelfrey couldn't get out of the second inning. 4-run second for the Twins. That's why it's 4-1 right now. A couple of sack flies, a double in there. Brian McCann got an RBI double for the Tigers in the sixth, and that game's now in the seventh. 4-1. We'll keep you updated there. So they've had to juggle some things in the rotation because of that. And you got to wonder if they're gonna how it's gonna end up coming down. Is Jordan Zimmermann gonna be able to contribute at all to this team in these next couple weeks? We already heard that they're going to stay with Michael Fulmer. And not stay, that's the wrong phrase. They're not going to skip any more of his starts for Michael Fulmer. Meaning that he technically, by calendar, and Anthony Fennec did the math on this yesterday for us, technically means he'll be in line to possibly start a wild card game if it gets that far. Tigers are still a game or so out of that. Let me triple check the numbers on that one. They're a game back right now of the Blue Jays for the second spot, two games behind Baltimore for the home spot. Seattle's a game and a half back, Yankees 2, Astros 3.5, Royals 4, and then you get to the 500 mark. The 500 mark is about 7 games out right now in the AL. That's how, in terms of winning teams having winning records, the AL is a lot stronger right now. But what do you do with Zimmermann? There's even speculation, again, that he may now not even be ready to pitch before this regular season is ready. And that would be a blow. I mean, because quite frankly, he gave you April. He was solid there. But outside of that, he's been injured and completely ineffective. And we spent a lot of time this season, you know, griping about Justin Upton's contract that he signed. Remember that? And he's only just turned it on finally in the last month or so. Right now, at least for 2016, not sure of the beyond part, but at least for 2016, Jordan Zimmermann's the bigger waste as of this moment, and most of that is due to injury still. But even when he's been out there, May was disastrous before he went injured, and then he's more or less barely been back on the mound since. 866-240-1065, numbers to join us. Let's go to those phone lines and see what's out there today. And we lost that one, so 866-240-1065. Numbers to join us. Indians right now leading 1-0 in Chicago with the 6-game division lead. Their magic number is 12 to close the division. And, of course, that Tigers-Indian series, at least the 3 games in Cleveland version, that starts tomorrow night. So that's going to be a very, very, very interesting one. They got a sack fly to the Indians from Jose Ramirez. Who else? He's been Mr. Clutch for them pretty much all season so far. Gets a sack fly to the third. That's where we stand, 1-0. And the Indians having kind of a possible bullpen day, although not sure when that's going to kick in. And Mike Clevenger is the one starting for the Indians. He's already pitched 3 shutout innings, but he's got a high pitch count. So we're probably going to see some bullpen arms for the Indians coming up. Incidentally, talking about guys injured, we were just talking about Zimmermann and Castellanos for the Tigers. Yan Gomes. Remember the Indians have that other catcher, Yan Gomes? I know catcher, in terms of production in 2016, has been horrific. And Gomes was one of the primary culprits of that. Well, he was in AA because that's the one Indians farm team that's still playing baseball right now. They're in the AA championship series, and he was catching for him in yesterday's game. He left midway through that game because he got hit by pitch on a wrist. Now, that's all they're really giving us at this point. It doesn't look like it's going to really put him back into a setback or anything. It sounds like more of a precautionary measure. But they did take him out of the game, and right now, he was originally, at least as far as the club was concerned, in theory, he was going to finally be activated and brought back for tomorrow. Maybe a little later the weekend, maybe Monday. if they're going to hold him off for getting hit by a pitch in Double A. So that's kind of where injuries essentially stand with those teams. And right now, it's still a 6-game lead. And, you know, I've been holding off on this for a long time. And there's still what we have coming up this weekend. We were talking about it yesterday. I figure in these last 7 games, the Detroit Tigers need to go. I'm just talking the 7 against the Indians, that is. They need to go 5-2 minimum to have any real impact. 5-2 would net them 3 games in the standings. I don't see a 6-1 or 7-0 for the Tigers coming. And no, that's not because the Indians are 11-1 right now against Detroit. I just don't see a team, a division rival, being another in the truest sense of crunch time, 6 out of 7 or 7 in a row. I just don't see that happening. Which is why you figure if you're the Tigers, one of the best case scenarios you could think of outside of that is to at least win both series. Win 2 out of 3, win 3 out of 4. That gets you 5-2. That shaves 3 of the remaining 6 games off the division lead. The real thing for the Tigers, though, and this is where I've been starting to shift, because this team is still very capable of pulling out a postseason slot. It'll mess up one of those teams. It'll screw over one of those teams in the AL East. Right now, it's been seeming like 3 were going to make it from the East and then just give us the champions from the other 2 divisions. Then the Tigers did enough to truly get themselves back in this thing. And to a degree, you know, kudos to the Seattle Mariners. They did the same thing. They're only a game and a half back. They're only a half game back of where the Tigers are. In other words, the Tigers lost and the Mariners win, and the Mariners are actually ahead of the Tigers in the standings. But I think if you're the Tigers, and, you know, they're not going to say it, Brad Auspice isn't going to say it, the players aren't going to say it, but I'll go ahead and say it. It's wild card or bust for the Tigers. And that's why I'm so interested to see how their starting rotation shakes out these last couple of weeks. Because if they can get in a position where you have Fulmer on the last day of the season, and given the strength of the AL East teams, I think fully clinching both wild card spots is going to come down to the last day or two of the season. You can have a Michael Fulmer going in that. That'd be perfect. Only because I'd rather have more experience with Verlander in the one-and-done crapshoot that is the wild card game. And then you go from there. If you get out of that series, face Texas. We'll see what happens then. Can't really plan that farther ahead than that. For the Indians, and that's why getting the win yesterday for them was so important, I think, you got to be able to not finish on a down note. Because in addition to the 7 games against the Tigers, Indians have 6 more with Kansas City. And then after today, the game going on right now, which the Indians lead 1-0 going to the bottom of the 4th, they have 3 more also against Chicago. Starting this past Monday, the Indians were in a weird quirk in the schedule where 3 full weeks left in the season and they only play Chicago, Detroit, Kansas City. So it's not as easy of a schedule. And with the struggling parts of the rotation, Salazar hurt. Despite his good effort last night, you do want to tip your cap to Josh Tomlin. It's been a while since we saw him pitch like that. But Josh Tomlin, other than last night, has been horrid since late July. The fact that you have the Mike Clevengers out there in bullpen games is part of this problem. And these starting rotation questions are really bigger questions for a division series and beyond. And it doesn't sound like it. We were talking yesterday with Zach Meisel, the AP writer out there in Cleveland. And he said something that I thought was very interesting, mentioning that as of right now, the plan is going to still be division series to have 4, not 3 in the rotation. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, and then the game 1 starter, most likely Corey Kluber, would also start game 5. Incidentally, the way it's shaping up, both those games would be in Cleveland. The Indians right now are 2 back of Texas for the number 1 spot, but they're 3 ahead of Boston and the rest of the East for the 2 spot, which means home field in that first division series, or in other words, games 1, 2, and 5. But I'm not sure for the division series, and I know most of that is because of normal rest. Because you'd have game one, game two, day off, game three, game four, and then the day off for the if necessary game five. Whether you're playing Boston or Toronto or whoever, I can't imagine that's going to be a sweep in either team's favor. So you got to figure that series is going minimum four, probably the full distance five. If you go with a three-man rotation, people are out of their normal rest. And that's why it sounds like, at least according to Zach Meisel, that they're going to lean towards four guys in the rotation. Well, who would start that game four? You're going to give it to Tomlin? You're going to have to, because Salazar won't be there. And you sure as heck aren't going bullpen day in game four of the playoffs, especially if game four is an elimination game, one way or the other. Also makes me less comfortable hearing that, thinking that it might be Josh Tomlin in that. But that sounds like where it's going. Normal rest is about the only reason to do that. As incidentally, Jose Abreu goes yard and ties the Indians-White Sox game at one. So some positive news right now for the Tigers. And it is Clevinger still out there in the fourth. But outside of the rest factor, I disagree. The Indians rotation now has taken enough beatings, injury to Salazar, ineffectiveness mainly of giving up the long ball by Josh Tomlin, again, despite his very good outing last night. The Indians would be better off going with three. Kluber, Carrasco, Bauer, then back to Kluber and Carrasco. But it sounds like they're going to go four. Now, you need four in a best of seven, the ALCS or the World Series. But like the Tigers, in terms of thinking past the wild card, let's not get ahead of ourselves. One series at a time at this point. So, it's probably looking like Tomlin for that game four, and that has me a little nervous. 866-240-1065. Those are the numbers to join us. Say quick timeout, get you check of traffic, check of weather, local sports center update, get you updated scores on both the Indians and the Tigers you're playing this afternoon, and all that, your phone calls, and Jason Candle as we roll on here on this Thursday edition of the Extravaganza. And actually, you know what? Since I have these, let me stop myself right there. I'm gonna hook you guys up too. Remember, I said I got some prizes today. I got three sets of tickets. If you want to go see the Rockets in the Glass Bowl on Saturday against Fresno State, I'm gonna give away the first four pack right now to caller number 10 at 866-240-1065. Caller number 10, you get a four pack of tickets. Rockets, Fresno State at the Glass Bowl coming up on Saturday afternoon. Now let's take that quick timeout. We can keep the phone lines open, anything and everything fair game, and then Jason Candle as we continue here on this Thursday edition of the Extravaganza. Jim Cushman in for Bob France on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back in. It's a Thursday edition of the Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Jim Cushman in for Bob France. He's got the day off today. He'll be back in the big chair for your free-for-all football Friday tomorrow. Lots of fun stuff, of course, going on. I'm kind of splitting the day between football and baseball. On the baseball side, of course, you got both the Indians and the Tigers playing some afternoon games. Right now, not going so well for the Tigers. They trail 4-1 in their closeout game of their series at Comerica Park. Turned into a bullpen day for the Detroit Tigers. Mike Pelfrey starting. Couldn't get out of the second inning in that four-run inning, and that's the entire difference in this one so far. Indians and White Sox tied at one in the just going to the fifth now. And Mike Clevinger, incidentally, has pitched four full innings for the Indians. So I was going to think, is that a bullpen day again? But it's looking like Clevinger is going to get getting more of a normal start. We'll keep, I'm going to keep an eye on every beginning of an inning to see if he's still out there. But he has completed four, only gave up the home run to Jose Abreu, who tied this game just a few moments ago. So we got that on the one hand, as well as where the state of some of the other races are, like the fact that the Chicago Cubs can clinch a division tonight. They're also still on pace to win 100 games plus for the first time since 1935, I think it was that I saw. Yeah, 1935. Boy, and when it comes to anything great the Cubs do, it's always decades upon decades ago since they did it. I mean, haven't won a pennant since 46. We all know World Series since 1908. Man, just the Cubbies. Well, we shall see on that front. You got Washington still in the lead in the East in the NL. Dodgers have a couple game lead now on the Giants, and I really, really love their chances because Clayton Kershaw is back, and he's ahead of schedule. There were some, I remember when he went down injured right by the All-Star break, there were some who figured you might not see him again the rest of the season. He is back, and that could be the difference right there in terms of the National League West, a division that the Giants led until falling all over themselves in the last month, and the Dodgers have taken over on there. Texas Rangers still, of course, have a comfortable lead, more comfortable than the Indians in the AL West. They're days away from clinching outright at this point. They also hold the number one spot in the AL, two games right now over the Indians, who are number two with that six-game Central lead, and the Indians have a three-game lead over Boston in the one division in all of baseball that's still kind of jumbled, the AL East, which right now stands at Red Sox with a one-game lead over Baltimore, two up on Toronto, four up on New York. Yes, I can't believe, despite the fact that they never said those words, but they still publicly did something they seemingly never do, or at least haven't done in a long, 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 long time, and that's blatantly sell at trade deadline time, bringing in the kids. Just so happens the kids have hit lights out. I mean, what could you say? They've kept them in this thing unbelievably, as the Yankees right now are just two games out of a playoff spot, one game back in the wild card where the Tigers are. Mariners have come alive. They are right now the current leaders in Major League Baseball for least amount, or I mean longest playoff drought. They haven't been to the playoffs since 2001. Amazing, right? So we'll keep you updated on these games as we go along this afternoon. 4-1 Tigers trail at Comerica in the eighth. 1-1 Indians and White Sox tied at U.S. Cellular in Chicago. Hey, don't forget about this. The next My Toledo auction is on and ends this coming Tuesday, so that's September 20th, 10 a.m. There are tons of awesome items up for bid, and they range from, well, a 2004 Volkswagen Passat GLS on the one hand to specialty pizza for a week for 26 weeks from Capers Pizza, or you can get 10 golf lessons from Golf Tech, just some of the many, many prizes over there at My Toledo Auction that you can enter into right now. So make sure you register and start that bid. Just click on My Toledo Auction link at 1065theticket.com, ending this coming Tuesday, the 20th. At 10 a.m. All right, we got to take a quick timeout. And on the other side, we're going to switch gears to the football part of the talk, which is going to be more college a little bit today than the NFL. Paul Keel's voice of the Buckeyes at 4:05. But up next, head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, will be joining us. And in honor of Jason Candle joining us, I'm going to hook you guys up again. The second of my three four-packs of tickets going out to caller number 10 right now at 866-240-1065. You will get a four-pack of tickets to see these Toledo Rockets playing at the Glass Bowl this Saturday afternoon against Fresno State. Caller number 10 at 866-240-1065 gets the four-pack. Coach Candle of the UT Rockets up next on this Thursday edition of the Extravaganza, ESPN 1065, The Ticket.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back into the Extravaganza. Jim Cushlin here with you. Well, we talk college football on all sorts of different places here on The Ticket as we go throughout the week. And one of those places we go to is the Toledo Rockets. They are now 2-0, looking to make it 3-0 coming up this weekend. Last weekend, a great win. And coming up, an interesting game at the Glass Bowl. And to help us talk all about those things, all things Toledo Rocket football, we welcome in the head coach of the Rockets. He is Jason Candle. Coach, how you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks so much for being on with us. We enjoy every second of it. Let's go back to first, before anything else, what happened last weekend, a 45-3 win at the Glass Bowl against Maine. And, you know, there's so many different things I could look at in a game like this, but let's just start with the quarterback play. Another outstanding game from Logan Woodside, 329, four touchdowns, did have the one pick, but looking solid as ever.
Yeah, he's done a really good job of, you know, locking in the details of what preparation looks like, and, you know, handling his week like a professional. And then, you know, in the last couple of weeks, certainly he's reaped the benefits of that on game day. You know, hopefully that preparation continues, and hopefully, you know, we continue to have success in the passing game, because teams are starting to, you know, really put a bunch of guys around the line of scrimmage to stack up against our run game that, you know, has got a great reputation. So we've got to be balanced, and, you know, we need good quarterback play to make that happen.
Yeah, and you're certainly getting that right now, and that's such a good point, too, because a lot of teams, obviously, when they're scouting the Toledo Rockets, it's, well, they got Kareem Hunt and Jones Moore and that just monsters in the backfield, so we got to do something about that. So if you have a passing game that can then complement all this and even perform like they did against Maine, then you have something that is hard to defend because you have multiple places to go to.
Yeah, no doubt. And we're striving for some balance, and you know, we got to be able to keep the defense off balance, so to speak, and a little bit on their heels, and you know, find ways to attack, you know where we can gain it, you know, gain an advantage in numbers wise, and you know, leverage and things like that. So if you don't have good balance, I don't know if you have the opportunity to do that. You know, if a defense can make you one dimensional, it's really tough to move the football, and you know, ultimately really tough to score points.
We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets, all things Rockets for college football right now. One of those guys that stepped it up, and this helps when you get to get that balance that you're talking about. The senior Corey Jones had an outstanding game, and talk about his play.
Yeah, I think Corey's a guy that can score the ball from anywhere on the field. I mean, that big one at the first quarter of the 85-yarder to get things going, that was a big spark for our team because we had just Maine a long drive where they had eaten a clock, 6 or 7 minutes off the clock. We had it, first two plays of that series, not too productive, and, you know, backed up, down three, getting ready to punt the ball back to him if we don't get off the field, if we don't make a third down conversion, and he snaps one out of there for 85 yards and a score and totally flips the, you know, complexity of the game. So certainly a great start, you know, and he continued his play throughout the game. He had, you know, he had one drop that I wish, you know, that he would have caught, and I'm sure he wishes he would have grabbed it too. But other than that, I thought he had a really good game, you know, and he's a senior. He's played a lot of football for us, and you know, he should expect to play well each and every Saturday.
And that's a good point also, Coach, to bring up specifically that sequence early on in the ball game, because, you know, for those who didn't catch the game or whatever, 45-3, but, you know, as you mentioned, it was a long drive. They got points out of it to start this game, and you were down 3-0, and you needed something on that key third down, and that's what you got to be able to do, no matter what part it's coming from, the run game, the passing game, whatever, is to convert on those third downs, keep things going, because, you know, I know you guys probably, you and the guys don't think about this, especially when you're on the field, but this was still a 1AA opponent. You don't want to let teams hang around. If you can make that strike and get a lead early, that usually starts making things take care of themselves. So that's a real key sequence there.
Yeah, it was, and I think our first, you know, the tale of 2 weeks, 2 weeks ago on defense, we got off the field on third down, you know, damn near every time to start the game off. And then this past week, we didn't, and they converted a couple. You know, we had a great crowd in our stadium Saturday, and, you know, I think our guys got caught up in the emotion of the first home game and, you know, wanting to play well and wanting to show our fans, you know, what we were about this year. And, you know, the last two times we played in the Glass Bowl prior to Saturday weren't the outcomes we expected. So I know it was important for our team to get back out in front of our home fans, and, you know, they did a great job showing up and staying the course and, you know, being a tremendous, you know, springboard for energy and, you know, getting our team going. And I think our team just maybe got a little bit of shock to that, seeing that crowd. And then once we got settled in, we ended up playing great defense and, you know, and great football the rest of the way out. So
we're talking Toledo Rockets football with the head coach himself, Jason Candle, joining us here on the Extravaganza. And before we switch gears to the upcoming game at the Glass Bowl this weekend against Fresno State, one last thing about Maine. After you guys get that lead, it just keeps going. It ends up 45-3. So your defense, which as we've talked about so far this season, coach, is looking for a little extra publicity. Well, doesn't matter the opponent. They still only allowed 3 points at the end of the day, so they're probably feeling pretty good too.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what happened in that first 6 minutes of the game. When you hold the other team to 3 points, you should expect to win. I think there's a, like I said before, there's a that's a prideful unit that's, you know, very well coached. I think all the coaches on that side of the football have done an awesome job of, you know, gaining a lot of trust and respect amongst our guys and got them playing at a high level right now, and we'll certainly need that to continue as we press on, because like you said, we got a great opponent coming in this week that, you know, presents some issues for us because they have a lot of skilled players who can score the ball from anywhere, and we got to do a great job of tackling and getting guys on the ground and containing that, you know, containing them and containing the quarterback who can hurt you with his feet as well as throwing the ball.
And way to help me segue, coach, you're a pro at this. Jason Candle, head coach of the Rockets, joining us. That next opponent coming into the Glass Bowl Saturday afternoon for a 3 o'clock kickoff is Fresno State out of the Mountain West. And, you know, depending who you talk to out there in college football, the Mountain West, more times than not, considered one of the better conferences, mid-major conferences, that is, in college football. The Boise State usually at the top of it. Fresno State, usually a decent program. They've had some mixed success in the last 3 to 5 years or so, but this is still a solid team that, as you mentioned, is going to has some things they could do to give you guys problems.
Yeah, anybody, like you mentioned, you know, that's a proud program, and anybody that's got tradition, you know, they're down, but they're not down for very long, you know, and I think this is a team that, you know, certainly got a little bit of confidence last week and certainly has some veteran players on defense that have played a lot of games for them, you know, and that's a confident unit that's playing fast that really did a good job of stymieing Nebraska for a good portion of that game, you know, and like I said, on offense, everything kind of revolves around the quarterback, a guy who can hurt you with his feet and really does a good job connecting with those three really outstanding wide receivers he has, and they're kind of like us offensively in that they maintain some good balance. You know, they're still going to run the ball and, you know, keep you off balance defensively and try to, you know, make sure your gap's sound and doing everything right. You know, they're not going to let you stack up on one or the other. So we got our work cut out for us. You know, they're a well-coached team. You know, I got a lot of respect for, you know, Coach DeRuiter and what he's been able to do there. And, you know, I know that, you know, things are on the up and up there and certainly look forward to a great game Saturday here.
Yeah, and it is here at the Glass Bowl for a 3 o'clock kickoff. And how much do those things play in any factor? I mean, they do have to come out here, so they got a more or less cross-country trip for this one as opposed to you guys having to go out there, for example. So you get them in the Glass Bowl, you get them in front of the friendly fans. How nice is that?
Well, I think, you know, I'm sure their staff will do a good job of trying to, you know, maintain as much of a routine as they possibly could, you know, on the road, just like as we will as well when we, you know, got to go to BYU in a couple weeks, and just like we had to time change when we went down to Arkansas State. So, you know, coaches do a good job of that, and I'm sure that those guys will be ready to play. Certainly nice to play in front of our home crowd, and hopefully, you know, we can match the, you know, our crowd can match its intensity and match the, you know, the numbers that we had in our stadium last week, because I thought it was an awesome environment and certainly, you know, challenge our city and challenge our university to come out and do it again this weekend.
We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets. Coach, one last question before I let you go. Kind of almost philosophical question. We know what thoughts are when you get into conference play, in this case into Mid-American conference play, and all those games start here in a couple of weeks, but these are the last two coming up. You mentioned BYU next week on the road. So you have an out-of-conference slate overall, two road games, two home, a Sun Belt team that's pretty solid, a Fresno State team that's a solid, BYU, a very traditional, very, very good program, and Mix Maine in there. From your perspective, obviously you want to win all the games, but what, from your standpoint as a coach, would you consider successful in the out-of-conference play?
Well, we got to continue to get better. I mean, we played our first game was Friday night, and our second game was the Saturday afternoon following. And, you know, so we went from an 8-day schedule to now we're on a Saturday to Saturday schedule. Next week we pick up a bye week, and we don't play till the following Friday. So, you know, your team is, you're fighting to maintain or some sort of a routine and develop some sort of a routine based off the days. And you know, they're into the thick of things academically now with classes and tests are coming up and quizzes, and, you know, it's starting to, you know, the season is starting to, you know, it's real, you know, the newness and the, you know, the beginning of it, that's kind of worn off. We're kind of into a routine and trying to, you know, just get better each and every day, and hopefully the results each and every week will continue to improve. I mean, we're 2-0, we're playing pretty good football, but we are certainly by no means a finished product, and there is a lot of things that we got to get better at. You know, so you just hope that each and every week you do a great job as coaching staff of trying to take some of those things off the film and keep improving and, you know, keep fighting the fight. But yeah, certainly the goal is ultimately to win every game. You know, that's why we play. But, you know, I think if you maintain some consistency, you see, you know, that level of emotion is up and that attitude is an all-time high, and we're playing fast. You know, I like where our team's at.
Coach, very, very well said. Thank you so much for the time. Best of luck on Saturday at Fresno's against Fresno State, and we'll catch up next week, hoping we were talking about the 3-0 Toledo Rockets. Thanks as always, Coach.
Thanks so much. Go Rockets.
That is head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, joining us. And, you know, I've always thought of that because we obviously know, you know, what a team wants to do in conference play. Even if you had a tough or bad four games or three, depending on your schedule, out of conference, and maybe they didn't go so well, you do some nice things in conference and you could still end up with a conference championship because of how, you know, things work in terms of the standings and everything. But I've always wondered that at times, because most teams, most schools, they get all three or four of them at the beginning of the season. Sure, sometimes you get one mid or late, or if you play somebody like a Notre Dame or an Army, somebody who's an independent like the Rockets have coming up next week at BYU, or 2 weeks from now, I should say, at BYU. That's Friday, September 30th. Yeah, Coach is right. I'm looking at it now. There is a bye week after this one. But, you know, is it more of getting guys used to the routine, working out all the kinks that are going on in terms of maybe some things you're doing wrong? Because you do want to obviously win every game. That's how you put yourself into even conference championship. It shows that if you're a good football team or not. It's a nice window into what one may expect in conference play. And then usually, especially at the Toledo or the Bowling Green, basically the Mid-American Conference level, you're in situations where you're always going to have at least one truly tough opponent in their building most of the time. For the Rockets' schedule, that's BYU. They also had to go on the road to Arkansas State. They won that game, of course, 31-10. That was the week one game. You usually get something like a Maine in there, and then a toss-up game, whether you're at home or on the road in this one against a decent, usually fellow mid-major team, in this case, a Fresno State. So it's very balanced. You got the strong road team in there. I mean, a win at BYU will look nice on a resume for whatever bowl may be looking at the Rockets, hopefully, down the line. So I've always wondered that. Well, what are the real goals, especially from a coach's perspective? And that was a great answer. I mean, you want to get these guys into the groove of everything, getting used to each other, getting used to the various routines. And anyone who's, of course, played can tell you, because football is not every day like baseball, the routine with everything you got going on, and then classes on top of that for college, there's a routine, there's a schedule, and you have to get with the program, basically. And out of conference, you want to win, especially if you're a strong team like we think the Rockets may be, in contention, I think, for this MAC West title, at least, especially if they can finally knock off Northern Illinois, and that comes up later in November. So you wanted to be able to do well, and I'll say what Coach can't say. I look at Arkansas State, Maine, Fresno State, BYU, with BYU on the road, and I say if they go 3-1 in all this, that is totally acceptable moving forward into MAC play. Plenty more coming up here on this edition of the Extravaganza. Jim Cushlin hanging out with you here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back in hour number two of this Thursday edition of the Extravaganza here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Jim Cushlin in for Bob France. Bob will be back in the big chair for your free-for-all / football Friday tomorrow. Lots of fun stuff, obviously, going on. Thanks so much to head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, for taking a few minutes and giving us all things Rockets. I do have one more four-pack, so keep your ears peeled if you want to go see the Rockets coming up on Saturday at the Glass Bowl. We've also been talking some baseball. Your update right now, Indians, White Sox still tied at one in the sixth. Meanwhile, Tigers are on their last couple of outs, and the Twins have gained another run, so it's 5-1 Twins leading the Tigers in afternoon baseball. We'll take more of your phone calls to keep you updated on those scores as we go along through hour number two here on this Thursday, but we're going to keep it with some football and college football, of course, specifically at that. The big one on the docket as far as all the regional teams, although if you're a Sparty fan, you might argue Michigan State, Notre Dame, but now that this one's bigger, and it's coming up on Saturday. We'll have it for you 6 o'clock, the pregame time, right here on the ticket, as the Buckeyes are in Norman to take on Oklahoma. That's 3-14. And to help us talk all things about this matchup, but generally where the Buckeyes stand, he's so gracious enough to join us every Thursday afternoon here on the Extravaganza. He is the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes, Paul Keels. Paul, thanks so much for the time as always. How you doing?
I'm good, Jim. How are you doing?
Can't complain. It's that fun time of year. It's the end of out of conference play, and this is the one that most Buckeye fans have been circling on the calendar, really ever since the schedules came out earlier. And of course, you know, this being an out of conference game, this matchup's been on the books for a couple years now. But it's a very interesting one, and it gets. And I was listening to you guys, you and head coach Urban Meyer and the rest earlier on the Urban Meyer College Show, and you know, I didn't really realize that. This is only the third time ever, counting bowl games, that these two teams have ever met. That's the, and neither of those two previous matchups were bowl games. And considering the program stature, that's kind of an interesting factoid.
You would have thought that just by accident they would have run into one another at the bowl game. But, yeah, 1977 in Columbus, a game that Oklahoma won when Uwe von Schaman booted a 41-yard field goal after his team had opened up an early 20-0 lead before Ohio State came back and reclaimed the lead. And then in 1983, and Jim Lachey has talked a lot about this game because he played in it, Ohio State went down to Norman. Mike Tomczak threw two touchdown passes to John Frank as the Buckeyes won the game. And it was so hot and so nasty that they had to put an IV in Mike Tomczak on the flight home and take him directly to Riverside Hospital once the team charter landed. So a couple of really good games, but it is amazing that it's only been twice that these two schools have played.
Yeah, and that's so good the way you word it, too. You would have figured that these two programs, given their stature, it would have matched up by accident in a bowl game somewhere along the lines. But, yeah, just fascinating that it's never happened before. But it's still a marquee matchup. It was thought a little bit better a couple weeks ago. And then, of course, Houston went out and beat Oklahoma in the opener. That dropped them in the rankings. But this is still a serious team with a great coaching from Bob Stoops, as always, and they got a very, very good quarterback as well.
They sure do. Baker Mayfield, who was fourth in the Heisman voting last year, and a guy that not only can hurt you with his arm, Jim, but what he does is, you know, they'll call some runs for him. He's not a bona fide rushing threat, but he's got the ability to kind of keep plays open. I mean, there have been some comparisons to Johnny Manziel. I tell you who I like to compare him to, just based on what I've watched, is what Craig Krenzel did when he was a junior at Ohio State when they won the national championship in 2002. He's a guy that just can make some things happen when things seem to break down. But a great group of receivers, maybe two of the best running backs in the country with Samaje Perine and Joe Mixon, but a defense that physically is going to present more of a on-the-hoof challenge than what Ohio State's seen in the first 2 weeks from the defenses that they've gone up against.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Obviously, an Oklahoma defense is certainly going to be a different animal than a Tulsa or a Bowling Green defense. There's no doubt about that. Let's go back real quick before we get more into this one to the last game out for the Buckeyes. 48-3, the win over Tulsa. There was the whole rainstorm that more or less extended halftime. It was kind of a struggle, I thought, for the Buckeyes a little bit in the first half, but then essentially after the delay, it was like watching a totally different game at that point. And quite frankly, that would be, let's see, that's eight quarters played so far. Honestly, six of the eight quarters have been outstanding. And I got to say, I'm a little surprised by that in this vein. I was the one leading into the Bowling Green game, and of course we have Bowling Green Falcons here in this part of Northwest Ohio, so I like to think that I pay a little more attention to them than I otherwise would. That's a solid team in their own right, despite being in the Mid-American Conference. I kind of thought with all the starters having to get to know their roles and all that stuff that goes in with starting a new season, I thought that they would struggle a little more. And the way I had kept comparing it was, think a couple years ago in the national title year, they won, but they struggled mightily in that opener against Navy, and then they dropped that next game to Virginia Tech. Now, I was still expecting them to be 2-0 here, Paul, but I thought it would be a little bit more of a struggle as guys got used to each other, the kind of thing a solid Bowling Green team might do to take advantage to keep themselves in a game. That totally didn't happen. And with the exception of the two quarters before the weather delay in the Tulsa game, I think Ohio State's played outstanding, and these guys are looking a lot more comfortable a lot earlier than I expected.
Well, I think, Jim, there's a few reasons to tie into that. You know, when you think back to the Bowling Green game, and certainly Bowling Green lost a lot when you consider being minus their two top receivers of a year ago, their top running back. And even though Kanapke had experience, they had lost a record-setting quarterback from the year before. And Ohio State pretty much made Bowling Green one-dimensional with what they were able to do with taking away the run. and making Bowling Green have to throw the football. Tulsa, on the other hand, I think they were able to do some things defensively that got Ohio State a little out of rhythm. And the coaches have even talked about they thought that maybe the Buckeye offense maybe wasn't completely operating as efficiently as they needed to. And what you saw in the second half of that game last Saturday, a concerted effort to be more physical. It was a run-heavy drive. The offensive line probably had been challenged with the extra time because of the delay. And they came out and asserted themselves. But, you know, the defense, Ohio State's defense has gone 8 quarters without giving up a touchdown. You know, they've come up with 7 interceptions. The defense has scored 3 times. This group certainly will be tested more Saturday than they have in the first 2 weeks. But they've also been able to take advantage of knowing they were facing 2 teams that wanted to throw the football an awful lot.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Oklahoma being Oklahoma is definitely going to run the football a lot more than some of these other teams would, and certainly be more effective at it. Do we see some different game plans, some different packages we might see out there defensively to counter some of that?
Well, if that's the case, they haven't told us, Jim. You know, I don't think you're going to see a whole lot different, you know, other than the fact that there's still some concern that Dante Booker might not be able to go at one of the outside linebacker spots, but they liked what they've gotten from the combination of Joe Berger and Jerome Baker. So, no, I don't think you're going to see anything drastically different, just knowing that they've got to be ready for more multiple threats from Oklahoma than what they've gotten from their first two opponents.
We're talking with Paul Keels, voice of the Buckeyes, here on the Extravaganza. Jim Cushlin in for Bob France here on this Thursday, getting you ready for the Buckeyes and Oklahoma. That's coming up Saturday, 6 o'clock pregame time for that 7:30 kick right here on the ticket. Back on the offensive side of the ball, let's start with the running game. And I found it interesting. You're obviously going to get production out of Barrett. That's part of what he is able to do. But Curtis Samuel has been effective as well, and he's more or less a guy who's been kind of waiting for his time in the spotlight. And then you have Mike Weber, who the name starter before the season. He had a touchdown in that Tulsa game. Talk to me about the new group of running backs, because after all, they are having to quote unquote replace Ezekiel Elliott. But I think that both of them have been adapting very, very well.
You know, what I think it's done, Jim, is it's given them the traditional tailback threat in Mike Weber, who seems to be just very much north and south, and, you know, a guy that is going to, you know, not give you a whole lot of dancing, a whole lot of lateral movement, but you're going to get the multiplicity that comes with Curtis Samuel and Dontre Wilson. They'll each line up in the backfield. They'll both go out as receivers. You know, Curtis Samuel probably a little more suited to being a pure running threat than Dontre Wilson is, but it's given them the opportunity to be a little more unpredictable. With Ezekiel Elliott and Carlos Hyde, you knew what you're going to get in some of those running situations. This has given them a lot more flexibility, and I think what it's also done, too, is allowed the offensive line with 3 new starters to kind of get their feet under them, to kind of get settled into what it is that they have to do. And case in point, that gives you what you saw last Saturday. You know, with Weber running the ball, with Barrett running the ball, and then Curtis Samuel and Dontre Wilson doing both running and catching, that can make them hopefully an offense that number one goes for balance, but number two that can keep the defense on its heels.
We are talking with Paul Keels. He is the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes, joining us here on the Extravaganza here on this Thursday. Jim Cushlin in for Bob France here on this Thursday edition. And talk to me about so far after 2 games, JT Barrett's season right now. How from your standpoint, you think it's going? Because after all, there was no debates, no entertainment value the way we had the previous offseason. We knew from day one it was going to be JT Barrett. I figured that might help him at least get back into the swing of things in a way where he's not as looking over his shoulder with the whole competition, if you will, that was on tap for a season ago at this point. Talk to me so far about JT Barrett's season after 2 games.
Well, week one certainly was a record-setting game against Bowling Green with 7 touchdowns responsible for. In week two, I think what you saw in the second half is what everybody anticipates from JT Barrett, and that, you know, being the guy that get that up-tempo offense rolling at a high pace, being able to, you know, deal with the audibles and make the changes that they want to make when they're facing some adjustments from the defense. You know, it was one because of the weather, probably in a lot of cases. You know, they didn't throw the ball an awful lot in the second half, but they were able to get him running the football, doing the read option, and just being the overall threat that JT Barrett is. And, you know, he'd probably be the first one to tell you the one thing he'd want to remove was the one fumble they lost on an exchange between he and Mike Weber. But, you know, I think what we've seen from JT Barrett is what we expected. And, you know, this will be a big test for him. You know, certainly he's got to be excited because he's going a couple hours away from his hometown. But, you know, he's been what we thought he would be. And, you know, a guy that, yeah, the quarterback question is no longer a question. But here's a guy that's really showing the benefit, Jim, I think, of his experience.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think that experience, as you're pointing out, is probably what's helping. He looks just so much more solid, so much more mature. Not that he wasn't a season ago or anything, but he just looks like he's made the progress you want to see out of a guy of his stature.
Well, and I think there's a big comfort factor that's there, too. But also knowing he's got a lot of weapons around him. When you think about the group of receivers, when you think about the guys we've talked about, and Wilson and Weber and Samuel, you know, a tight end also to factor in there too. So, you know, this is where we'll learn a little more about JT Barrett, but he's been through this stuff before. He's played in tough environments, you know, Michigan State, Penn State, you know, he's played in Ann Arbor. So this is where we'll get to see the benefit of what he's been able to do. And Urban Meyer talked an awful lot today too about this is where leadership is going to come into play because of the environment they're going to go into and what it is that they'll face.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, Norman's obviously one of those toughest places in all the land to play. A great power matchup for this one. What do you make of some of the comments that came out of the Oklahoma side the other day? I forget how it's worded. Kind of that they're prepared for Ohio State in a way that oh gosh, I am blanking on how it was exactly worded off the top of my head. But more or less what they were saying is, well, it's kind of plain, is more or less what they were using to describe the Buckeyes. I'm sure guys like us will try to ask the question, is that being used as bulletin board material? I don't think Urban Meyer's squad needs that, but your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I know what you're talking about. It was the backup quarterback
who, in
a TV interview, said something about it being kind of simple. And when we Coach Meyer was asked about that today on the call-in show by one of the callers, he was not aware of it, but said that he was certain that if it did happen, that the assistant coaches would be, and they don't mind using bulletin board material if that's what they need to do. But you know, it's also just going to come down to executing. They know that they're facing a good football team, and you know, that's kind of the bottom line of what he's trying to prepare his club for, to be ready for what Oklahoma will give them. You know, he's got great respect for Bob Stoops and what he's done. Here's the thing that shocked me. A couple of things, Jim, that maybe you knew this. I didn't going into all of this. Number one, that Bob Stoops now is the all-time winningest coach in Oklahoma history. And number two, that he's the longest tenured coach at one school in the FBS division, you know, with how long he's been there. So, you know, that tells you what they've done consistently. And, you know, yeah, there's probably been years where people griped about some of the bowl games that they lost. But he's got a national championship to his credit. He's got 9 conference titles. So, you know, whatever bulletin board material or anything comes out, that's whatever it is. But, you know, Urban Meyer and his coaching staff and those players know they're going down there to play a great football team.
Yeah, and I definitely kind of was aware of the number two stat you threw out there, that Bob Stoops is now the most tenured coach in college football. Of course, I know that as a Virginia Tech alum because that used to be held by Frank Beamer, who stepped out at the end of last season. So I had randomly kept track of that, and so I did notice that Stoops now occupies that role. It kind of makes sense. I mean, he has been there for a long, long time at this point, and with a program like Oklahoma, you're going to rack up the wins, no doubt about it. It'll be a fun one coming up on Saturday, 7:30 for the kickoff, 6 o'clock for your pregame, Paul. That's when it starts. You can hear it right here on the Ticket, Ohio State and Oklahoma. It's going to be a doozy. We're all looking forward to it, and we're looking forward to hearing your call of it, Paul. Thanks so much for the time and the insights, and we'll catch up with you again next week.
All right, sounds good, Jim. Take care.
That is Paul Keel's voice of the Buckeyes joining us here on the Extravaganza. And yeah, I would have figured, because I had looked that up, because, you know, me being me, I was kind of curious about that, because I, being the Virginia Tech guy, as you guys know, once Joe Pa stepped down at Penn State those couple years ago, that made Frank Beamer the longest tenured coach in college football. Well, that tenure came to an end last December, and at the time I looked up, and sure enough, yeah, Bob Stoops now takes over that role, which will put him amongst the very tip-top of winningest active coaches in all of college football as well. And as Paul mentioned, he's the all-time Oklahoma leader in wins, which is a no small accomplishment in its own right, but it's going to be a dandy of a football game, and I can't wait for one of the more impressive out-of-conference games for the Buckeyes in quite some time. We're going to take a quick timeout, get you an update on some of these baseball afternoon games, what's going on with those, and we'll take some more of your phone calls. We're going to reopen the phone lines at 866-240-1065. Anything and everything, always fair game with me. We got some baseball. I got some thoughts on some of the other college matchups out there. The other big one in the region, Oklahoma, Ohio State, is kind of overshadowing the fact that Michigan State and Notre Dame are slated to play on Saturday as well. That should be another doozy of a game. So we can talk about all those things. We'll get an update on some of these baseball scores here for the afternoon for the Indians and the Tigers. And as we head into this quick timeout, I got my final four pack. You want to talk some football? I'm going to send you to see some football coming up on Saturday. My final four pack of tickets to see the Rockets taking on Fresno State Glass Bowl Saturday afternoon. Be caller number 10 right now at 866-240-1065. And you will be having a fun Saturday afternoon at the Glass Bowl watching some college football. Caller number 10 has a four-pack of Rockets tickets for the Glass Bowl on Saturday against Fresno State at 866-240-1065. Your phone calls on anything and everything and some of these baseball updates next as we roll on this Thursday edition of the Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
106.5. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5, The Ticket.
And welcome back into this Thursday edition of the Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Jim Cushlin in for Bob France here on this Thursday. Having a lot of fun. We're talking football things, the college variety, and so many thanks go out to head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, for joining us, as well as voice of the Buckeyes, Paul Keels. Always an excellent time when you get to talk to the play-by-play voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes. We're also talking baseball here on this Thursday afternoon. I love to, especially when I get the chance to be in the big chair, love talking baseball. When you got all the games going on in the afternoon, now comes the part where I get dispense with the bad news. Bad news, if you're a Tigers fan, they fall to the Twins, 5-1 the final in this one. Mike Pelfrey, maybe it was going to be a bullpen day altogether originally, maybe not. But Mike Pelfrey does not make it out of the second inning. 4 runs, 5 hits. The bullpen was pretty decent, though, numbers-wise. They went 7 1/3, gave up, they gave up a run on 6 hits, struck out. They were struck out 7, but it obviously, it was already decided earlier that the Tigers could not get anything going against Hector Santiago, who gets the win in 5 2/3 solid innings. The Tigers just not able to muster anything. They scattered 9 hits. That's really the way to describe it, scattering 9 hits. And the only extra base hit drove in the only Tigers run of the game on a James McCann RBI double in the 6th. So they just weren't able to get much out of anything. Mike Pelfrey was ineffective. And that means, as of this moment, it's now 6.5 for the Tigers. They're also now game and a half, or is it 2.5 out of that wild card spot? It's now game and a half out of that wild card spot. That technically puts them in a tie also with the Mariners. And the Mariners, incidentally, who do they play later? Are they on off day today? They are on an off day today. So that means the Tigers are going into the series against the Indians tomorrow 6 back if the Indians lose. And that game, by the way, is tied at 1 stretch time in Chicago. So I'll give you the updates and some of the numbers from that one. But that means they go into tomorrow's game, which is the first of those final 7. The Indians and Tigers haven't played since right before the All-Star break in July. And here we are in mid-September. Indians at the moment now lead the Tigers by 6.5. If the Indians lose, it'll be back to 6. If the Indians win, it'll be up to 7 for the opener of that series tomorrow. But either way, as I now see that the Mariners are on off day today, that means they're going to go in a game and a half out of the wild card and tied with Seattle. And actually, it could be worse because Baltimore plays today at home against Tampa, and Toronto's got some late night baseball at the Big A against the Angels. So whether home or road, Baltimore and Toronto have opponents they probably should beat tonight. So it could be 2.5 or 2 out of a wild card and 7 out of a division by the time the Tigers take the field tomorrow in Cleveland against the Indians. And in a series that, quite frankly, and we've been kind of talking about this as we brought it up here in the extravaganza these last couple of days. If you're the Tigers, you got to at least take the 2 out of 3. Maybe even sweep the Indians at this point. I said the barest minimum that if you're a Tigers that is doable and acceptable would be to go 5-2 in these 7 games. That's winning 2 out of 3 this weekend, and then in that final week of the season, it's the 4-game weekday series in Detroit. You take 3 out of 4. Because I'm not going to predict sweeps either way here. But that's 5-2, but that would only shave 3 games off of what is at the moment a 6.5 game lead. Could be 6, could be 7, depending on this Indians-White Sox result. And that game's, again, going into the bottom of the 7, tied at 1. So there's just not a lot of time left. The only other possible advantage is, as I'm looking at the Tigers, after the Indians, they take Monday off. That's their final off day of the year. Then it's 3 more against the Twins, though, this time in Minnesota. Kansas City for 3 next weekend. Then you got the 4 games against Cleveland to round out the home schedule before going to Atlanta and playing the hapless Braves, of which I would say the only bad part about that is it's in Atlanta, so Victor Martinez will probably be on the shelf. Because, you know, no DH. Another story for another day. I am sorry. I am one of those people who is definitely in favor of DH all around. Maybe that comes from growing up in an American League city. You know, maybe that's the case, because ever since I could remember, I always have been watching baseball involving a DH, unless a National League team was on TV. Remember watching the Indians as I grew up, they always had a DH, because that was, 1973 was the first season of the DH. I was born in 81. It just seems normal to me. Anyway, outside of that, the Tigers should have an advantage as the Atlanta Braves are blatantly rebuilding. They're moving into the new park, and they're one of the worst teams in baseball. About the only team worse is the Twins, who the Tigers could not beat today, thus earning a split in that series. But I'm not sure how much the Tigers would really have to do to win the division at this point. And even though the Indians have their problems, they've only been playing okay, and they actually, for the first time all year, at the worst possible time, have blatant rotation issues. You know, Salazar's gone. And to all you Indians fans out there, I wouldn't be too encouraged about him coming back for the playoffs. Even if he does, are you going to want to, with no rehab and anything, after the issues he's had since the All-Star break, are you really going to want to throw him into the fire, say it's game 4 of the ALCS and the Indians could go down 3-1 with a loss? Are you going to give Salazar, who basically would not have pitched in a month, are you going to give him the ball? I wouldn't. Same kind of question goes for the Detroit Tigers. Today it was supposed to be Jordan Zimmermann finally returning. That didn't happen. They changed the plans. Had him pitch a simulated game yesterday. Now, all signs point to his simulated game went well. He threw 80 pitches in it. But they're not coming out right now, right away and saying, yep, he looks good to go. Even though they said it was a decent simulated game for him yesterday, made the progress they needed to see, I don't think they haven't said anything one way or the other that, yep, he'll be out there for his next start. Quite the contrary. Speculation is that you might not see him in the regular season again in these final 2.5 weeks. So what's that going to do? And granted, obviously the Detroit Tigers in many ways have gotten where they are without the assistance of Jordan Zimmermann, which to me makes him, at least for 2016 purposes anyway, he's the bigger free agent signing bust, at least as of right now. That could change. But as of right now, the bigger quote-unquote waste of money for free agency for the Tigers this past offseason is Blakely Zimmermann. He was AL pitcher of the month in April. Since then, he's been injured and or ineffective. The few times he's been out there, blatantly ineffective. Tigers are where they are because Michael Fulmer had to occupy a starting spot. He's run away with the Rookie of the Year award and is even going to get some Cy Young votes because of it. Matt Boyd, Daniel Norris, when he came back hurt, have pitched well enough. And I can't believe I'm saying this considering how the last year and a half has gone. But Anibal Sanchez, let's face facts, he's done okay since being put into the back end of the rotation here as of late. I had written him off completely, especially earlier in the year. I could shrug last year off to injuries, but this year, you don't have any such excuse. So he's been solid. Mike Pelfrey was a disappointment, not just today, but overall. You weren't expecting a ton out of him, but you figured he'd be a serviceable, capable number five. He had a good season for what it's worth in Minnesota last year. You figured he'd be a good, capable number five that would eat innings for you. He did none of that. That's why he got demoted to the bullpen and gets brought back in on days like this when Zimmerman can't actually make it back. So a lot of this is contingent on how's that going to shake out? And it seems like the one advantage the Tigers have is outside of their matchups with the Indians, their schedule's easier. There's a Kansas City, another Minnesota, and an Atlanta on that schedule. So that's pretty much where it is at that point. 866-240-1065 numbers to join us. Tigers fall to the Twins 5-1. Indians and White Sox, they are tied. There looks like some kind of review of a play at first. So we're going to check on all of that. The phone lines are open. Anything, everything fair game. You want to talk some of the football stuff? We were going over with Paul Keels and Jason Candle earlier. You could do that. You want to talk about some of these baseball races and where it looks? We could do that as well. They overturned the call, so that's it for the seventh. Still tied 1-1 Indians and White Sox. So we'll get you updated scores on all that. Take some more of your phone calls as we roll along here on this Thursday edition of the Extravaganza. Jim Kuchlin in for Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back in. Final segment here of this Thursday edition of the Extravaganza. Jim Kuchlin in for Bob France. Bob will be back in the big chair coming up tomorrow for your free-for-all slash football Friday. And on that note, by the way, for the football Friday, already booked our couple of guests we're going to have. We'll talk some Lions as they get ready for their week two game, their home opener against the Tennessee Titans. We'll talk with Justin Rogers of the Detroit News. He is the beat writer for the Lions for the Detroit News. We'll talk with him at 3:35. Bill Clark, gracious enough to move to 4:05, and that's when we'll get your week four already, high school football preview. It's league play time for everybody but the City League because, you know, everybody else has pretty much eight teams, therefore seven league games, whereas, of course, City League only has five, therefore four league games, so they aren't starting league play in the City League just yet, but everybody else is, and so Bill Clark will tell us about all the great matchups at about 4:05 tomorrow. Incidentally, high school wise on our airwaves over the course of this weekend, we'll have Central Catholic. They are home to Clay tomorrow, 6:30 pregame time with Bill Clark and the crew right here on the ticket. That'll be followed by the high school scoreboard show from out at Frickers. You'll also have Perrysburg at Springfield, 6:30 over on our sister station, 100.7 The Zone. That is a fascinating matchup for two reasons. Number one, both teams are 3-0. And number two, at least from my vantage point, and I'm not as much of an expert as, say, Bill Clark is, Perrysburg and Springfield would have been my two top teams, at least how I would have thought of it, in the NLL. So the NLL opener may very well decide who wins the Northern Lakes League, and it's only September because 3-0 Springfield hosts 3-0 Perrysburg coming up tomorrow. Hey, want to keep you guys advised about this as well. The next My Toledo auction is on and ends this Tuesday. That's the 20th, coming up at 10 a.m. this Tuesday, the 20th. So check out some all the awesome items up for bid, and there's such a variety, too. For example, you get $500 gift certificates to the various Sauter's markets, a Train high-efficiency gas furnace, limo service from Team Johnson Limo, and how about this one? A Galileo digital grand piano from Craig's Keyboard. So you have gift certificates, you have cars, you have grand pianos. Didn't I tell you there was variety here? It's My Toledo Auction. It's coming up this Tuesday, September 20th, 10 a.m. And to make sure you register and start your bidding, just click on My Toledo Auction link at 1065theticket.com. 866-240-1065. Do have a few minutes to squeeze in some of your phone calls. Anything, everything, always fair game with me. Our main topics so far today have been the Barry's baseball out there with both the Indians and the Tigers playing some afternoon games. Not a good result for the Tigers. They fall to the Twins 5-1 to split that series. Indians now going to the bottom of the eighth, still tied at one with the White Sox in Chicago. Despite it being an in-theory bullpen day, Mike Clevinger actually went four full innings in this one. 866-240-1065. Let's go to the phone lines. Hi, you're on the Extravaganza on the Ticket. Who's this? And we lost him. All right, 866-240-1065. Okay. And as I've been focusing on some of the baseball, and that's part of it because I love when they all play in the afternoon. When the Indians Tigers have afternoon games, I love being able to give you the various updates. And in fact, let's go through some of what happened in this one. And one of the big hits in that four-run second, that was the deciding inning for this game, four-run second for the Twins. And it featured, among other things, a two-run single for Brian Dozier. The Brian Dozier who has 41 home runs this year. A Brian Dozier who, a stat I saw in the ninth inning on the TV machine that I have here on the studio watching this one. Brian Dozier in the four games in this series had 19 plate appearances. He reached base 12 times. Dude is just in a zone right now. Just a ridiculous zone. Pity for him, his team is as bad as they've been this season. But the Twins do get the win. Brian Dozier was a part of it. They got a decent outing from Hector Santiago. And Mike Pelfrey, who had to be plugged back into the starting lineup, couldn't get out of the second inning. Now, he wasn't going to pitch more than about 60 pitches anyway, but the runs and hits just never seemed to stop in that second inning. And suddenly it was a 4-0 lead. That I at least had this feeling watching it. I looked at it and think, it's the Twins. It's only the second inning. But man, that feels like the ball game right there. I just had this weird feeling. And sure enough, that's exactly how it ended up happening. Tigers would get a run on a James McCann RBI double in the sixth, but the Twins would add one more in the ninth to make it 5-1. So now the Tigers are 6.5 back and 1.5 out of the wild card. That's at the moment. They're tied with Seattle. Mariners are off today, but the teams ahead of the Tigers in the wild card, Baltimore and Toronto, both play, and they both get easy opponents. Baltimore is hosting the Rays, while the Blue Jays are out on the West Coast in the Big A to take on the Angels. So, it could be 2.5 out of a wild card. And if the Indians could scrape a run at some point in the next couple innings, it's bottom of the eighth in Chicago, tied 1-1, then the division is up to 7 games, leading into tomorrow's first of 3 between the Tigers and the Indians. This is the Cleveland series. And incidentally, interesting pitching matches for these games. Tomorrow, you're going to have Corey Kluber going for the Indians. He's getting Cy Young consideration, as is his opponent, who's getting not only the consideration for Cy Young, but should run away, and I say this as an Indians guy, should run away with the Rookie of the Year, Michael Fulmer. And the guy who finished second, by the way, in that should be Tyler Naquin, but Michael Fulmer is the Rookie of the Year in the American League. That's your matchup tomorrow. Saturday night, it's Carrasco-Verlander. And then on Sunday afternoon, come on, Trevor Bauer, Daniel Norris. And I like what Daniel Norris has done since he came back from his injury earlier the year, too. He's helped stabilize a couple things, especially when Zimmerman's been out hurt, especially when Pelfrey had to be removed. Sanchez removed and then put back, partly because they needed bodies at that point. In many ways, I'm amazed. What's kept this team afloat, at least on the pitching side of things, has been the fact that the kids have stepped up, and Verlander looks as close as he has in a little while to that Cy Young MVP Verlander. This is why in our discussion we were having yesterday, a discussion that easily can go on from a Tigers perspective for these next 2 weeks. Who would you start in a wild card game? And for me, it's Verlander, because he looks like the Verlander of old, and he's got that experience. Remember what he did in that division series a couple years ago against the A's? They couldn't touch him in the 2 games he pitched. If they handed out MVPs for individual division series, Verlander would have won that MVP in a landslide. That's why you want him in the 1-game playoff. The only downside, of course, of that is that means you'd only get him for one start, probably a game 3, maybe a game 4 in the division series, and that'd be it. If you go with Fulmer, you'd get multiple starts out of a Verlander in a division series. The question then becomes, do you really want Michael Fulmer pitching in the do or die playoff game? And I'll say this from an Indians fan perspective, as in the perspective of somebody who follows a team that's been through one of these. Hindsight 2020, and know that I'm not about to pick on it because he's currently hurt. But if you remember, the Indians' rotation at that point got in such a way, not a bad one. I mean, they needed everybody. Ubaldo was outstanding that second half, and he pitched last day of the season. It forced them to go with Danny Salazar, the rookie, who had only been up for half a season, to pitch in the playoff game. And you could see the butterflies that he had during that game. The Rays got an early lead in the third, and Alex Cobb kept the Indians off the scoreboard, and that was it. I mean, maybe if you had had somebody else, maybe you had had that second half 2013 Ubaldo, maybe the same thing happens. But in a one-game winner-take-all situation, which the wild card game is, would you rather have Verlander and his experience or Fulmer, despite his outstanding year? Don't get me wrong. He should get Cy Young. This is not to detract from the fact that he should get Cy Young consideration, blatant Cy Young consideration, and that he should be the runaway winner of the American League's Rookie of the Year. Fact of the matter is, he's still a rookie. And do you want to throw him into that crucible? Especially if you can line it up in such a way that you get Verlander in that game possibly instead. That's what I would do if I'm Brad Ausmus. But part of this also started because this Anthony Fenech, our good buddy up there for the Detroit Free Press, when he was talking to us yesterday, helped point out that because they've decided they're not going to skip any more Michael Fulmer starts, because Fulmer is a rookie, and the guys teams like to do this with rookies to ease their workload, because when you pitch a full major league season in your first year, it really is a big time innings workload. Because, well, think of it this way: minor league seasons ended 10 days ago, unless you're in that particular league's championship series at this point. Like Akron is for the Indians. That's why Yan Gomes was playing for Akron yesterday, despite the fact that Labor Day was 10 days ago. So they're not going to skip any more starts. And as Anthony Fenech pointed out, that means if you follow the calendar, adding in the one off day coming up this Monday, then Fulmer could possibly be the guy to start that wild card game, which, by the way, the AL wild card game is going to be Tuesday, the 4th, which means game one of either division series, Cleveland, for example, that would be Thursday, October 6th. So there's a lot still that has to happen, of course, but there are interesting things going on all sides, and right now it is still 1-1 Indians, White Sox, bottom of the 8th in Chicago. Indians are looking to make it 7 games up on the Tigers, who fell to Minnesota. They split that series 5-1. The Twins get the win for that one. And that's going to do it for this edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks, of course, to Jason Candle and Paul Keels for giving us their time as well. Stick around. Mike Miller on Drive Time is coming up next. And then we have football for you a little bit later on both sides. You have Falcons Nest Coaches Show over on the AM Side Talk Radio 1470 at 6 o'clock tonight. And then courtesy of our friends at Westwood One, Jets, Bills from Buffalo, 8 o'clock pregame time as your week 2 kicks off tonight. So enjoy the football, enjoy Drive Time, stick around for that next, and we'll talk to you on the Extravaganza tomorrow for a football and free-for-all Friday. See you then.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.